proceed to the fifth case, Hemsworth v. Quotesmith. Mr. Platt?
Good morning, Your Honor. Stephen Platt on behalf of the Mr. Hemsworth. This is a case in which a judge of Virginia, Kendall, granted summary judgment in an age discrimination action and in which she ignored, without any discussion whatsoever, an affidavit that was submitted in opposition, in support of our position, in opposition to the motion by the former head of personnel, human resources, Rick Pipel, attached as Exhibit B to our memorandum in opposition as Exhibit Number B to Document 33 in the record. And that was subject to a motion to strike by the defendants, but it was never ruled on. The case was transferred from Judge Bucklow to Judge Kendall. Judge Bucklow, in December of 2005, said she was taking the motion to strike under advisement. There was never any ruling on it. There was absolutely no discussion of this affidavit in the decision at all. Why is this important? Well, number one, as the head of human resources, Mr. Pipel, was a party. And what he says are party admissions. And what Mr. Pipel says is there was a series of reductions in the number of individuals who were working at this company from approximately August of 2001 all the way through January of 2002. In August of 2001, there is a major reduction in force. The vice president of the company shows the proposed list to Mr. Pipel, who's the head of human resources, and he tells him, and he says this in his affidavit, he says there's a problem with this list. The problem was that 80% of the people that they were going to eliminate were over the age of 40. And he suggested that they take this back to the president and the second-in-command, Mr. Toms and Mr. Bland, the two owners of the company, and discuss it with them. And he said that Mr. Christensen, who he was talking to, who happens to also be a lawyer, was taking notes about this conversation. Christensen takes the information back to Bland and Toms, and the reduction in force goes ahead without any changes whatsoever.
Let me tell you what my problem is here. Maybe you have an answer for it. Bland, is that the guy who runs the Quotesmith?
Yes.
Okay. Bland hires your client. He's 54 years old. Pays him a rather healthy salary with a signing bonus. After a year, gives him a $30,000 raise, and then a year later fires him, and the claim in this case is that he fired him because he was an old guy. Now, it just doesn't seem to follow one step to the other to get to that conclusion. It just...
That's what's called the same actor defense, and that's what a lot of defendants try to say. They try to say...
Well, let's talk about
the common sense defense. Let's talk about that, because the key here is that the defense says that Mr. Bland knew Hemsworth's age when he hired him. There's a notation that he submits as an affidavit in support of the summary judgment motion in which he says, I wrote down his age, age 54.
He didn't think he was 18 years old. He had 25 years experience in marketing, and that's why they wanted him hired. He was working at a golf course or something.
That's the defendant's version of the facts. That's not the plaintiff's version of the facts. The plaintiff's version of the facts is that stuff did not come out in the discussion. He said that Mr. Hemsworth said that if that discussion had taken place, he would have remembered it. The defendants then say, well, since he can't remember one way or the other, the inference should be in favor of the defense, and we must assume that because Bland says that he did talk about it, that therefore he did, and he knew his age.
How old does Brand think your client is?
We don't know that. Bland claims that he knew that he said he was 54. But my client says that did not come up in the discussion.
Claiming that 2 years later he fired him because he was an old guy.
There's an important event that takes place between the time he's hired and the time he's fired, and that is that he has a stroke. And there's a discussion about how the stroke ages him. And now if he's running a company that he wants people to be aggressive and active and physically, with it, if the guy had a stroke and he's aged in the eyes of the owner, that makes a difference.
But there's also a huge change in the financial health of the company during that 2 year period.
That's interesting too, because when they hire Mr. Hemsworth, they lost $18 million. The year that he gives them a raise, the next year, they lost $23 million. The year after that, they lose a same double-digit figure and they go out and they buy another company. If the company's fortunes, whether they're making money or losing money, has to do with Mr. Hemsworth, why was he hiring him? Why was he giving him a raise? And why did they go out and buy a company while they were losing money?
Well, didn't their public offering all indicate they were going to lose money?
Exactly. Exactly. That was the business plan here, as was so often was the case. Which is why, and again, this is a question of inferences. The defense has a tendency to take reverse inferences. The inferences on summary judgment, as you obviously know, the inferences are supposed to be taken in favor of the party opposing it. The defense wants everybody here to take the inferences exactly the opposite. They want you to say, ignore the business plan. If they're losing money, that must mean that they had an economic justification for terminating Mr. Hemsworth. If Mr. Bland says he discussed Hemsworth's age when he hired him, you must assume that Mr. Bland is correct, even though Hemsworth denies it.
He doesn't recall it.
Now, it's different than saying, there's one thing to say I don't remember. It's quite another to say it's what Mr. Hemsworth said. He said two things in his affidavit. He said, I don't recall it, but he also says in the very next sentence, if I had said something like that, I would have remembered it. What that is a recollection. He just doesn't remember the details. It's
a
lot different.
Is that a question of material fact?
Sure, it's a question of material fact. If you add all the facts together, you can't balkanize the evidence and look at each individual fact as they attempt to and say, this doesn't add up, that doesn't add up. You have to look at the whole picture. And the whole picture consists of the following. You have a workforce that is substantially reduced in terms of people who are over the age of 40 over a period of several months. You have a company, after they do this riff with the individuals, they terminate Mr. Christensen, who's 56. They terminate Mr. Pipel, who's 48. They terminate Mr. Hemsworth, who's 56. And they terminate Mr. Wozniak. Now, under the Older Workers Benefit Protection Act, they give Mr. Hemsworth the breakdown of the information as they're supposed to of who's included in their quote-unquote riff, because they say this was part of a riff. They give him a 45-day notice. They include on the list Christensen, who wasn't fired in January, he was fired in October. They don't include on the list Mr. Pipel, who was fired in November. And they include Mr. Hemsworth and Mr. Wozniak. What is it? Was Christensen part of the riff or wasn't he? And if Christensen is part of the riff back in October, then all of these eliminations have to be considered part of the same equation. They're not even telling the truth. And under the Supreme Court precedent in Reeves, if there is evidence of mendacity, the trier of fact is permitted to find that the evidence of mendacity is proof of pretext in favor of age. We have a lot of inferences here. The inferences were taken in the wrong direction, and there's no discussion of some critical information provided by Mr. Pipel. I see that my time, I want to reserve time for rebuttal, so.
Thank you, Mr. Blatt. No, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Howard Moser. I represent the defendant, Appalee, now known as Insure.com, known as Quotesmith.com, during the period of time when the case was pending. Your Honors, I want to comment on a few things Mr. Platt said before I address what I was planning on saying. First of all, this whole issue about the employment interview, Mr. Bland testified in his affidavit, as well as I believe in his deposition, that during the November 11 interview, Mr. Hemsworth allowed us how he was 54 years old. He had four children, and his wife worked in the tax department at Ernst & Young. We put that in our Rule 56(1A) statement as paragraph 31. Mr. Platt, on behalf of Mr. Hemsworth, admitted that. So it is admitted. Now, the same actor of principle is seriously at issue here. It's not at issue. It supports the proposition that you don't hire a man who's 54 years old, knowing he's 54 years old, and fire him 2 years later because he's 56. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. In terms of Mr. Pipel's affidavit, it didn't comply in significant part, I think 9 out of 13 paragraphs didn't comply with Rule 56E. Most of the paragraphs were not based on personal knowledge. They didn't set forth facts, and they didn't show that Mr. Pipel was competent to testify. So Judge Kendall properly disregarded it. As she properly disregarded most of the 56-1B responses that Mr. Platt filed because they didn't comply with Rule 56.
Did she comment on that in her order?
The only one that she commented on in her order, Your Honor, specifically, was Mr. Platt had denied a number of background facts in his 56-1B about the company, what it did, where it was located, that it lost money. And she said she was going to disregard those because they weren't properly denied. Also, too, in Mr. Hemsworth's affidavit, he said you can't believe any of this stuff, which was relied on for some of the 56-1B denials, because these people are liars. And she cited Roger Whitmore's automotive service case versus Lake County for the proposition that lying, simply saying that the other side is a liar, does not create a material issue of fact. And I believe in the Schuster v. Lucent Technologies case, Your Honor, came to the same conclusion, where the employee, which was also an age discrimination case, where the employee said, I can't believe what they're saying because they're liars. The layoff of August the 6th is totally irrelevant to this whole case. First of all, and Mr. Platt hasn't laid a foundation at all for even showing that there's a statistical disparity in connection with the layoff. In the Radu versus Kimberly Clark case, an employee who was terminated later in time as a result of a subsequent layoff said that an earlier layoff discriminated against him because the numbers of people who were laid off during the earlier layoff were of an advanced age. This court in that case said that the employees and a reduction in force that's not part of the same reduction in force in which the plaintiff was involved with is not relevant because they're remote in time. Furthermore, the August 3rd layoff was irrelevant for the reason that Bert Christensen, not Mr. Bland, who made the decision to terminate Mr. Hemsworth, made the effective decision as to who to lay off during the August 3 layoff. The layoff affected insurance policy application processing employees because the company had outsourced that part of its business. These were rank-and-file employees and some people called team leaders. They were low on the totem pole. They weren't similarly situated to Mr. Hemsworth, who was making $180,000, well, at that time, maybe $180,000, as a senior marketing executive, vice president. And so this court said to be for a reduction in force to have any evidentiary value in another case where age discrimination is involved, the employee has to be similarly situated to those who were laid off. He wasn't similarly situated to the people who were laid off of the August 3 layoff. Furthermore, Mr. Pipel's affidavit only says he thought there was a problem because of the number of older people being laid off. Mr. Christensen, in his affidavit, who is a lawyer, by the way, testified that he did not consider the ages of any of the people that he chose to lay off and those that he chose to retain, which is exactly what the Hazen case in the Supreme Court says you're supposed to do. The other part of the problem with that whole layoff is Mr. Platt never obtained any evidence to show what the age makeup of the relevant labor pool was before the layoff and after the layoff. And this court has said on numerous occasions that just because a large number of people in a protected class are affected by a layoff is evidentially meaningless unless you tie that to the whole relevant labor pool. So I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors going on in this case. This is a very simple case. Mr. Bland decided to hire Mr. Hemsworth to take over a $24 million marketing budget. As Your Honor said, Judge Flamio, the company's plan was to have manageable losses to increase the customer base. Well, what changed about that was in the year 2000 when they lost $18 million, not $23 million, as Mr. Platt said, compared with $13 million the year before that. Again, at this time, the company had gone public, and Mr. Bland testified in his affidavit that he was getting a lot of heat from the shareholders and from the directors, and he had to change the plan and cut costs. And the first thing to cut was the marketing budget because it was the most elastic. And they did some other downsizing and other reductions, and that still didn't solve the problem because in 2001, they still lost $6 million, but sales were down by 20%. Sales were down by 40%, even though with a cost reduction of 20% in operational costs. And that was when the decision was made to let Mr. Hemsworth go, because the marketing budget by that time had been reduced from $24 million down to $7 million, down to $2.9 million for the year 2002. And Mr. Bland had done the marketing before, when the marketing budget was at $14 million in 1999. And he said, it's very simple. You don't need to pay a man a lot of money to do a job that you can basically do in your spare time and that you've done in your spare time as the CEO of the company. So I think that, Judge Kendall properly analyzed this case. She looked at the facts, the evidence that was admissible and relevant. She applied the direct evidence test. She applied the circumstantial evidence test. She applied the McDonnell-Douglas indirect evidence test. And she concluded, under all applicable criteria, that there was simply no material issue of disputed fact that warranted a trial here. And I really think that Judge Evans hit the nail on the head when, Your Honor, when you said you don't hire a man at 54 years old, pay him $150,000 and a $7,500 signing bonus. A year later, by the way, 10 months after he had this stroke, increase his salary by 30%, hang on to him for another year because, as Mr. Bland testified in his affidavit, he was compelled to honor the contract, the employment contracts, which didn't expire until December 31, 2000, and then let the man go because he's 2 years older. I mean, there's just, it makes absolutely no sense. I know I have some more time left, but I am prepared to answer any questions that the court has. I think there's really not much more to be said because this was a very simple case, and Judge Kendall came up with the right conclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
Mr. Pine?
Let me respond once and finally about the fact that Judge Kendall didn't pay any attention to the Pipel affidavit. Mr. Mosser wants to say that she did, but all you have to do is look at footnote 2 on page 2 of her decision, which is in appendix A2, and it says all you need to look at. It says right there, Hemsworth relies solely upon his own affidavit testimony. Solely upon his own affidavit testimony. She goes on to discuss about the, you know, statements being true or untrue. That is not correct. That is not a statement of what is in the record. And as point of fact, it was not only Hemsworth's affidavit, but also Mr. Pipel's affidavit that talk about the mendacity of Mr. Bland. In fact, in Mr. Pipel's affidavit, beginning at paragraph 13, actually it was paragraph 11 through 15, Mr. Pipel describes an incident where Mr. Bland was prepared in 2001 for a shareholders' call in which he was given a script to follow about the financial statement or existent, the financial condition of the company, and that he and the CFO heard Mr. Bland go off script and say things that were absolutely untrue. Now, that it's it. In fact, that would even rise, and we said in our brief, the way he states it would even probably even rise to a securities violation, a criminal law violation. Now, that's something that's pretty significant. When somebody says under oath that I heard the CEO of the company going off script on a shareholders' call and misrepresenting the financial condition of the company, number one, that's not speculation. That's based on what he heard because he was there and he knows what he heard and he knows what the script was because he was involved in it. And number two, it's not even referred to in her discussion. And by saying that only Hemsworth was the person who talked about the mendacity of Bland, that shows very clearly that she didn't even realize the Pipel affidavit existed, even though it was attached as Exhibit B to our memorandum in opposition and referred to on several different parts of the 56E statement. In addition to that fact, that's a pretty significant omission.
Is it your concern that the language of Mr. Pipel, Mr. Platt, that I want to quote this accurately, I felt primarily because of the ages of the people let go that we had a potential problems with the list. Is that what Judge Kendall failed to take into consideration? Is that the thrust of the importance of the affidavit that you say?
The importance of the affidavit is this. Christensen, the vice president, who's a lawyer, as they point out, shows the list to the HR director. Why does he show it to him? He didn't show it to him because it was a Sudoku puzzle. He showed it to him because he wanted to get advice as to whether or not it complied with HR rules. The man says, we got a problem with this list. He takes notes.
Because of the ages, we have a potential problem with the list. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think when 80% of the people on a list are being terminated or over the age of 40, saying that we have a potential problem is kind of an understatement. And that's what he was saying. He shows him the list and he says, you got a problem with this list.
Do we have any indication what the average age of the people are? I mean, I understand that it turns out to be 80%. But
we had to do that.
Do we have the record reflect
We did that in the reply. The reason we had to do it in the reply is because with summary judgment, they file the motion, we respond, we say here are the numbers with the 80%. Then they come back and they make a motion to strike. Now they say in appeal, you didn't show the workforce. Well, the workforce numbers are in the record. And in our reply brief, we went through that. And in our reply brief, we pointed out, in fact, I see if I have it here. Well, if you check the reply brief, you'll see, oh, here it is. On page 11, I went through the evidence that's in the record, and what we show you is that if you give them the benefit of the doubt, in all instances where we don't know the age of an individual who's left, because their affidavit from Mr. Bland says, we started out with 129 employees, we went down to approximately 80. If we do the math based on all the documents in the record, we come out with 83, so Bland is probably about right. If we assume anybody whose age we don't have is under the age of 40, which is giving them the benefit of the doubt, which is not the way it should be on summary judgment anyway, you go from a workforce that is 25% over the age of 40 on August 1st of 01 to a workforce that only has 8% of its people over the age of 40 after my client is terminated on January 15th of 02. If that isn't significant, I don't know what is. And you also have Bland admitting he made the ageist comments about Mr. Carbon and was admonished about it in a manager's meeting. Then Mr. Carbon, the oldest employee of the company, gets terminated after that. And then we have the other evidence. So we think that taken together with the inferences properly drawn, summary judgment never should have been granted here.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Platt. Thank you, Mr. Moncrief.